What you gotta say now? You ain't got shit to say. When you put your girl on the snap, baby, yo, babe. I mean, shit getting weird. Come on, baby. It's hot outside. You fucking wrapped up in that blanket. Let's go jog on the beach.
Yeah, yeah. Everything's good. Everything's selling good. Out arenas and everything. Yeah. Starting to act different, huh? You ain't been calling me and hanging out the way we used to hang out.
Well, I mean, you try to get in contact with me, you know, through all my, you know, partners and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But you never really got my number, so.
Right. Okay.
My number?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, what's good, everybody? It's your boy, See Through the Script here, back with another video, and let's jump right into it. Ever since I was young, listening to hip-hop, one artist that I couldn't avoid seeing on the TV screen was the infamous Sean Combs, better known as P. Diddy. Diddy has been a fixture in the hip-hop world since the early 90s and has managed to build quite the empire. He has established himself not only as a business mogul and hip-hop heavyweight, but also someone seemingly willing to do whatever it takes to be successful, leaving in its wake an intriguing track record of allegations from the numerous individuals he has been associated with in some way, shape, or form. As most of you have already heard by now, Diddy has recently had his name ringing through the headlines, and not for the best reasons. On November 16th, 2023, Cassie, the longtime ex-girlfriend of Diddy, who's also a singer and model, filed a damning lawsuit against him, alleging that he f***ed her and engaged in This legal action stirred a social media uproar, leading to a deep dive into P. Diddy's past. Speculations arose, even drawing parallels to the situation faced by R&B singer R. Kelly. People were even going as far as saying Netflix is probably going to end up putting out a surviving P. Diddy documentary. To make matters worse, Diddy had his legal team come to a settlement literally a day after the news broke, settling for an undisclosed amount, which we could only imagine is in the ballpark of the 20 millions and upwards. From allegations as wild as Diddy having Kid Cudi's car blown up in 2012 for dating Cassie, to domestic abuse, to him being a part of the rainbow community, to potentially even having several people 86th to avoid future problems, only to end up causing more, let's dive into the life of Sean P. Diddy Combs and figure out how he ended up here. Sean John Combs, widely known as P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, Brother Love, or just Diddy, a man of many names, was born on November 4th, 1969, in Harlem, New York City. Raised in the Mount Vernon neighborhood, he grew up in a household where his mother, Janice Smalls, worked as a model and teacher's assistant. Sadly, his father, Melvin Earl Combs, was murdered when Sean was just 2 years old. This tragedy had a profound impact on his upbringing. Despite the challenges, P. Diddy attended the prestigious Mount St. Michael Academy in the Bronx, where he displayed an early entrepreneurial spirit by selling newspapers. His education continued at Howard University in Washington, D.C., where he pursued a business degree, but left before completing his studies to pursue opportunities in the music industry. His formative years, P. Diddy's exposure to the vibrant music scene of New York City, combined with his tenacity and visionary mindset, laid the foundation for his future success. From these early experiences and challenges emerged a determined individual who would go on to shape the landscape of hip-hop and the entertainment industry as a whole. In the history of hip-hop, the establishment of Bad Boy Records reflects Sean Combs' journey in the industry. Starting as an unpaid intern at Uptown Records, Diddy worked his way up to become an executive A&R. Regrettably, Diddy faced termination by Andre Harrell, music industry executive and founder of Uptown Records, the same person who provided Diddy with his initial opportunity in the industry. Despite this setback, Diddy's ambition remained. In response to his setback, he aimed to create something unique. So in 1993, Bad Boy Records was founded, and its inception involved collaboration with big-time music executive Clyde Davis, founder and former president of Arista Records, now CCO of Sony Music Entertainment. Clive Davis was already a well-established music industry powerhouse, with artists under his belt such as Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, Aretha Franklin, Whitney Houston, and many more. Clive started out as a lawyer with zero interest in the music business, but he was poached by Columbia Records to be their chief lawyer, to which he held that position for about 5 years and eventually worked his way up to the president of Columbia Records, then later starting his own label, Arista Records. With the great success Clive had with his artist, he didn't really see it necessary to expand his boundaries beyond the worlds of rock and pop, but that wouldn't last long. On a podcast in 2021, Clive Davis recalls how he met a young Sean Combs and how he was convinced by him to focus his attention to the world of hip-hop that was beginning to get more and more popular. Clive goes on to say, quote, "Puffy was 23 years old, and I knew the artists that I had, Aretha, Dionne, Whitney, was one-of-a-kind music." Davis says, LaFace ushered in blue-collared R&B at its height, but sensing the hip-hop revolution, both LA and I agreed that we could use someone really attuned to the street. You gotta know what you can do for yourself, and you gotta know when you need to look to other people. He describes how Diddy was confident that hip-hop would dominate the charts in the future, to which he asked Diddy for the proof. Quote, "When I met Puffy, he articulated that hip-hop should be part of the top 40 mainstream, and that business would change in the future. And I said, what have you got to illustrate that point? And he played me Craig Mack's Flava in Your Ear, and he played me the then unknown artist that he felt and believed so strongly. He played me 4 or 5 cuts from Notorious B.I.G. With Diddy making his point, Davis introduced him to label executives who would help him execute his vision. Quote, "I said, okay, you proved your point. That's when I introduced him to the weekly, what we called singles meetings." Davis adds, quote, "I introduced him to an executive there as someone who would help lead us to the street and share in the forthcoming hip-hop revolution." In a Forbes article, it discusses the nature of P. Diddy and Clive Davis's business relationship. When Combs' platinum sales started piling up, Bad Boy scored more consecutive gold and platinum albums than even Berry Gordy's Motown had in its early days. He renegotiated with Arista. Puffy and his advisors were too tight-lipped to even discuss previous reports, but in 1996, sources tell us Davis gave him $10 million, a 50% ownership stake, and the right to buy back his master recordings and Arista's 50% stake in 2003. Last year, with close to 20 million CDs sold from Mace, Biggie, and Puffy's own album, he hit Arista for another $55 million as an advance against future earnings. This time, he consulted numerous industry entrepreneurs, including billionaire David Geffen. Quote, "I told them they had to make things right. I wanted to be very, very rich right away," says Puffy. By 1996, Diddy had successfully introduced several artists to the world and planned to continue doing so. Diddy would go on to sign Faith Evans, who added a dynamic dimension to Bad Boy's repertoire. Her debut album, Faith, released in 1995, marked another milestone for the label. The roster expanded with the addition of 112, an R&B quartet, and Total, an all-female R&B group. While all this talent was brewing up, Diddy was working closely with his next protege by the name of Mace. But unfortunately, Bad Boy's label would go on to suffer a major loss, with the rapper Biggie Smalls dying at the age of 24 years old on March 9, 1997, in a drive-by shooting. About 16 days later, Bad Boy Records would go on to release Biggie's first posthumous album, titled Life After Death, going on to make Diddy a whole lot of money in his career. But Diddy wasn't playing around when he said he wanted to be, quote, very, very rich, as it's still a business and the show must go on. So 4.5 months later, Diddy would go on to release his extremely successful solo debut album, No Way Out, selling upwards to 7 million copies in the US alone. The success would continue during that year, despite the label's devastating loss, as Diddy's protege Mace would end up dropping his debut album, Harlem's World, doing extremely well on the charts, going on to sell 3.3 million copies. All these moves Diddy made up until this point were truly paying off, as he'd quickly expanded his wealth through several other business ventures fueled off the back of his great success in the music industry. Love him or hate him, his adaptability to trends ensured the label's enduring influence in music, fashion, and popular culture. However, as many are aware, the music industry is a cutthroat business, and one must be willing to do whatever it takes to reach the top. In my previous video on rapper Lil Baby, I mentioned the doors to success, a concept referenced by rapper Nori. He explained that artists during their rise to stardom typically find themselves at a crossroad, alluding to the idea that they have three doors to enter through. While he dances around the specifics, he essentially states that artists at this conjuncture are confronted with the choice to engage in those fruity activities, make some sort of ritual sacrifice, or try to navigate the industry independently. In this video, it'll become quite clear the different doors Diddy was more than willing to explore so he could ingrain his name as a hip-hop icon. On Diddy's path to becoming one of the few hip-hop artists to reach billionaire status, he hasn't been able to evade the numerous allegations surrounding his character and his reportedly unethical business tactics, all aimed at ensuring he remains at the center of all benefits. I'm not gonna lie, this list is quite long and I won't be going into every detail or every allegation, but let's discuss some of the biggest ones from the past leading up to this present day. First are the speculations that Diddy knows way more than he's ever going to share with the world surrounding the deaths of hip-hop legends Biggie and Tupac. In all seriousness, these are cases that I plan to make individual videos on at another time, so stay tuned. Truthfully, there's zero doubt in my mind that Biggie Smalls was P. Diddy's first major Faustian bargain, ensuring he'd have a long career for what he was willing to give up. For those that saw my video on Lil Baby, this pertains to one of the doors to success Diddy was willing to open. Next is the fact that Diddy literally withheld the publishing rights from all his major artists who played a pivotal role in building his label, from Faith Evans and Mace to The Lox, 112, and the estate of the Notorious B.I.G. These catalogs are worth millions of dollars and contributed significantly to Diddy's wealth, all at the expense of these artists who essentially didn't benefit as much as Diddy did. It wasn't until 2021, nearly 30 years later, that Diddy agreed to give back the publishing rights to these artists. Of course, he tries to come off as the good guy in a statement saying he did this as part of a broader goal of promoting economic empowerment for black artists and culture. But before Diddy decided to do something he should have done decades ago and give back the publishing rights to these artists, he was facing a flurry of allegations that Puff Daddy was up to some fruity shit behind the scenes.
I like when you like this, Daddy.
Yeah, where you put my bag?
Daddy, I like when you're scrambling and scraping for shit.
No,
I like that.
Oh, pause.
Look back on where I became.
Did you miss me, though? For real. Because it seems like a thing.
I miss his birthday party. Puff, man.
Man, but I'm talking about for your birthday.
Huh?
Why won't you party with me for your birthday, man?
We partied for my birthday before. You came to my party.
No, but me and you ain't never really party, you know what I'm saying?
What do you mean by that?
Many have speculated on the hip-hop mogul's sexuality, despite his numerous public relationships with women and even having several children of his own. However, earlier I mentioned a man by the name of Clive Davis. Well, funny enough, Mr. Clive Davis, a great mentor and business partner to Diddy, is also on that rainbow timing. In his 2013 autobiography titled The Soundtrack to My Life, Davis gets personal, revealing that he's bisexual and has, over the past two decades, been in two long-term relationships with men, as well as other sorts of relationships. Quote, there were married couples, gay couples, and single men and women, both straight and gay. He treats this news with the same directness as he does with other aspects of his life. So remember, Diddy was and is still likely in business with Davis, so surely that apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, if you get me.
I am not gay. I have relationships with women and sex with men.
And I got news for you. That means you're gay.
Oh, no. This can't be. It says I'm 102%
gay.
Now, although Diddy's certainly a hip-hop heavyweight, resulting in few people wanting to actually call him out, the fellow New York hip-hop icon 50 Cent has been clowning Diddy for years, alluding to him being up to some strange things. from posting pictures of what looks like P. Diddy and 50 Cent's arch nemesis Rick Ross about to do some
hold up, wait a minute.
In that same post years ago, you can see Diddy and now CEO of United Masters, Steve Stout, looking like they're on a damn couples retreat.
Something is wrong here. Dead giveaway.
But it gets far worse than that. We're really only scraping the surface. I should state that there isn't any particular order of what I'm saying. I'm just kind of going through the many stories that are out there. In a 2009 interview with Sirius Satellite's Foxhole Radio, rapper Xzibit shared a story about how Diddy ended up taking him to a gay club in Miami. The story starts on New Year's Day when Diddy, Xzibit, and a popular video vixen at the time, Corinne Superhead Steffens, were all hanging out. At one point, Diddy called Xzibit out and told him, quote, "Yo, you know about that girl you with?" I was like, "Yeah, everybody knows." He's like, "That's the devil, man." I was like, "What you mean she's the devil?" Then he was like, "She'll videotape you with fingers in the booty." I was like, "What? What the f*** are you talking about?" Moments later, Xzibit went back to ask Corinne about what Diddy just told him. But she simply laughed it off, explaining she'd tell him about it later. In the interview, Xzibit says, quote, "I guess he had some prior incident with her that he didn't want nobody to know about." Xzibit explains how later Diddy invited both him and Corinne to a nightclub to which they both agreed. Upon showing up, things seemed pretty normal entering through the VIP lounge area. As Diddy was doing his own thing, Xzibit and Corinne decided to head downstairs to get a drink. And that's when Corinne pointed to the corner, only for Xzibit to see two dudes lip-locking. Then she pointed in another direction, and he saw a dude butt-ass naked dancing. After the interview aired, it blew up with reports coming out questioning Diddy's sexuality. Diddy even called Xzibit the next day, to which Xzibit put out a statement saying, quote, "I have no beef with Diddy. Wow, so I wake up this morning and my phone is going nuts. I turn on my computer and find all this shit about me, throwing Diddy under the gay bus," whatever that means. All this spin that you journalists are putting on to the statements I made on a radio show to directly affect a guy in a manner not intended is wrong. I got a call yesterday, which caught me off guard, from Diddy himself, stating the club was an after-hours spot called Space, I believe. Now, beyond this story with Xzibit, Diddy has had numerous allegations of using his power in the music industry to make young entertainers big promises in exchange for some you-know-what. This not only being the case with women, but of course men too. Let's start with the R&B staple Usher. Usher, at the young age of 13, had a successful audition with industry exec L.A. Reid. He quickly sent Usher to Puffy Flavor Camp, where he lived with Diddy to gain experience as an entertainer.
Was like, I don't want it to come close to the bed at all. Usher looked like he fresh off a goddamn plane. Usher
fresh off the guard stage. That's my brother right here from day one. We used to wake up and, I mean, damn, pause, but like, just, I mean, back in the days when he was like 10 and I was a little bit older, his older brother, we used to fight over the Frosted Flakes, you know what I'm saying, before pause was invented. But it's my brother for real. We used to actually wrestle off of the Frosted Flakes because he used to always get up early with me. Now he's one of the richest stars in the world. And I'm
yo,
like,
what the f*** did Puff just say?
In an interview with Howard Stern, Usher got asked whether he'd send his own kid to Puffy's Flavor Camp, knowing what he knows now.
You're a dad now. Would you ever send your kid to Puffy Camp?
Hell no.
The rumors allege that Diddy groomed Usher while he had legal guardianship over him.
I mean, damn, pause, but like, just, I mean, back in the days when he was like 10 and I was a little bit older, his older brother.
Not only exposing him to a very adult lifestyle before legal age, but even having him hook up with older women at wild parties. There are even claims that Diddy and Usher had a more intimate relationship, if you will, leading to Usher getting an STD from Diddy, allegedly. While speaking of Usher, he wasn't the only young future star at the time who'd be subjected to Diddy's manipulative ways. A young Justin Bieber had just been discovered, and with the help of Usher, who got Bieber an audition with L.A. Reid, the same man who Usher auditioned for around the same age, then led to Bieber inking a deal with Island Def Jam Recordings. Usher, of course, having a connection to Diddy, introduced him to Bieber, and of course, there are rumors of some strange stuff that might have gone down. There isn't any concrete evidence to support these claims, But there are these bizarre clips of Justin Bieber and Diddy having conversations where Diddy is seen promising Justin cars and a mansion, and you know what? You could just have a look for yourself.
So check this out, yo. Justin, he's in, you ever seen the movie 48 Hours? Right now, he's having 48 hours with Diddy, him and his boy. They're having the times of their lives, like, you know, where we hanging out and what we doing. We can't really disclose, but it's definitely a 15-year-old's dream. You know, I have been given custody of him. You know, he signed to Usher.
I'm signed to Usher.
I had legal guardianship of Usher when you know, he did his first album. I did Usher's first album. I don't have legal guardianship of him, but for the next 48 hours, he's with me. So, and we going to go full, buck full crazy.
What did he say?
I'm taking this out tonight.
What you want to do? What you want to do over the next 48 hours?
48 hours. Let's go. Are we gonna? Let's just go get some girls. Let's go get some girls.
Are you sure you don't want something more?
And then we have the wild tales from the That's So Raven star Orlando Brown, detailing times where him and Diddy did some fruity acts on each other. And I know there's a lot of people out there that might overlook what Orlando says in these interviews. Granted, his history with drug abuse and many unhinged interviews, as some might consider, he surely was in the entertainment industry from a young age, and as he'd gotten older, detailed the hardships of being so young, surrounded by leeches trying to extract whatever they can off the hard work, off these young stars. Of course, it's important to take his claims with a grain of salt, but check this out.
I got in my Diddy mode. I'm sorry. I start licking my lip. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yo, Diddy, you gave me the Oshkosh Goosebash. You gave me the Oshkosh Muaf, the Shmoosmash, Diddy.
In addition to that, recently I saw a clip with up-and-coming ATL comedian Desi Banks talking about him being new to fame and asking others about things he should look out for in the industry. And here's what the others had to say.
What are some things that you feel like I should look out for? You know, coming into the game. Like, you've been in the game for a long time, man.
Somebody's house for.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Stay away from take that mansion. That's all I'm going to say. All right, stay away from that. All right. Second, they're laughing because they know it's true.
I'm new. So I don't know.
So as twisted as the story sounds up until now, the allegations really don't seem to stop. And of course, with Cassie reaching a settlement, it shines the light on others who have spoken on Diddy's disturbing behavior in the past. Diddy's former bodyguard, Gene Deal, has been speaking about Diddy in interviews for many years, and considering how long he's been around him, he knows quite a bit. Listening to these interviews myself, he definitely doesn't hold back, and was pretty direct when stating that Diddy was abusive towards Kim Porter, and he's firm that Cassie went through the exact same things and probably more. He didn't shy away from sharing that Diddy most definitely likes men and was clearly swinging that way. And he also confirms many people's suspicions that Diddy was fully aware of what would happen to Biggie and Pac, plus a ton of other things that I recommend you checking out some of the interviews if you really want more details on those specific matters. Another man by the name of Mark Curry, a rapper slash songwriter that worked closely with Diddy, best known for his 2001 single Bad Boy for Life, has been vocal on the many wicked things Diddy was up to. In 2009, he even released a book titled Dancing with the Devil, speaking in great detail about the horrible times he had working with Diddy, from his own experiences of being misled and overlooked, to how Diddy dealt with other personal relationships, such as his ex-girlfriend and mother of three of his children, Kim Porter. He talks about how he'd wiretap her phones to make sure she wasn't doing anything he wouldn't approve of. And he also talks about a time when the two were on a yacht in Saint-Tropez, when Diddy and Kim got into an argument which would end up leaving Kim with a broken nose, resulting in Kim receiving cosmetic work on her nose to fix the appearance and avoid stirring up media drama. But that didn't help. Mark explained how almost all the time the media would end up taking his side of the story, mainly due to his influence within the industry, to ensure he controlled the narrative. Then we also have the many wild stories that have come from the Philadelphia neo-soul and R&B singer Jaguar Wright. who has been going off for several years now about all of the same things Diddy's bodyguard Gene Deal said and the bad boy songwriter Mark Curry said, plus many more. She alludes to the idea that Diddy learned all of his power-tripping, manipulative ways from other industry execs, such as the likes of Clive Davis. Another interesting theory she raises is that Uptown Records was sabotaged by Diddy, almost like he held a grudge for letting him go all those years back. She points out how the founder of Uptown Records, Andre Harrell, who gave Diddy his shot and later fired him, died from a heart attack. Then Heavy D, who was an early signee of Uptown, died from a blood clot in his lung. Then Uptown Records R&B star Al B. Sure, ex-husband of Kim Porter, suffered from a two-month coma after going through bariatric surgery, and then she finished off with Kim Porter and her mysterious passing. On top of all of that, she points out how those individuals were pretty much all working on either tell-all books or like a documentary that would have likely spoke on the many things Diddy would probably want to remain hidden.
And then he goes into a coma. Has Puffy ever been in a coma? Has anything happened to him? He must be the luckiest motherfucker, because it seems like everybody that worked at Uptown Records from the very beginning. Gone. Just him. Just him. Just him. Just him. Just him. Just him. Just him.
Now, amidst all these allegations from his sexuality, manipulative business tactics, abusive personality, and overall slimy behavior, Diddy has had quite the interesting relationship with a woman by the name of Kimberly Antoinette Porter before his time with Cassie. Kimberly, aka Kim Porter, was a model, singer, actress, and more. In 1994, she met a young Sean Combs, and the two would go on to have a roller coaster of a relationship. In 1998, they welcomed their first child together by the name of Christian Casey. But it was only a year later that the two would break up due to a battle in court over child support for Christian. In this time the two were split, Diddy went on to date Jennifer Lopez until about 2003, when Kim and Diddy got back together. And about 3 years later, in 2006, they would welcome their twin daughters. So in total, Diddy had 3 children with Kim Porter. For some additional context, in 2005, Diddy met Cassie, the woman who would end up casting a major spotlight on him 10 years later, and not for the best reasons, which we all know about now. But yeah, Kim was with Diddy in his earliest days of his success and surely had witnessed a lot of the good Diddy could provide, but certainly this wouldn't outweigh the bad. There's a reason that they had a very on and off relationship. Kim states that the relationship went sour when she was still pregnant with the couple's twins and a girlfriend told her that Diddy had recently fathered a baby with another woman and she didn't get the official word from Diddy until after their twins were born. Despite all of the bumps in the road throughout the couple's relationship, Kim always managed to keep things pretty calm in the public eye, even after their 2007 split. Fast forward 11 years later in 2018, things from the outside looking in probably seemed pretty normal, as Diddy would go on about promoting black excellence while still being a slimy ass guy, while Kim remained relatively low key in the eyes of the media, always appearing for candid photo shoots with the family. But no wild drama from what I could see, but please inform me in the comments if I'm wrong about that. But then out of nowhere,
we have breaking news to tell you about now. Model and actress Kim Porter, who shares 3 children with Sean Diddy Combs, has been found dead.
Stu Mandel live over the Porter's home, or Porter's home, I should say, in Toluca Lake. Stu?
Well, that's right. It's actually out here, Toluca Lake, at the corner of Woodbridge and Arcola. Now, apparently earlier this evening, the actress and model Kim Porter, who, as you said, shares 3 children with the music icon P. Diddy, was found here, passed away this afternoon. Now, they're saying that she did pass away from an illness, and it is natural causes. Right now, though, we do see a lot of activity at the house.
So naturally, with the suspicious death of the seemingly healthy young woman, Kim Porter, who was strongly connected with such a powerful figure in the entertainment industry like Diddy, people's spidey senses were tingling. Prior to Kim's death, it was reported that Diddy and her were on good terms. In a 2019 Essence interview, Diddy states, quote, "She had the flu and she sent the kids over to my house so they wouldn't get sick." Diddy shared, quote, "One night I was checking on her and she was like, 'Puffy, take care of my babies.' She actually said that to me before she died," end quote. But things got pretty strange in 2020 when Kim's ex-husband, Al B. Sure, who she had a child with that Diddy raised, came out on a since-deleted Instagram post alluding to the idea that Kim did not die naturally and that it was very likely that she was murdered. Now, with Diddy's wild past and lengthy track record of allegations, people didn't doubt one bit that Diddy actually did have something to do with the passing of his former lover. Many obviously wondered, though, why Diddy would want to have his ex-lover 86th. Did she possibly know something and had plans on sharing it that could have been damning to Diddy's career? If so, why didn't it end up like the situation with Cassie and a settlement? Honestly, those are all good questions that I don't have the exact answers to, but one possible motive suggests that prior to Kim's death, she was working on a tell-all book that was going to be titled How to Raise Well-Mannered Children in Hollywood, according to a longtime friend and hairstylist Lisa Pope. Many people speculated that the book was going to touch on the allegations that I discussed earlier in this video and then some. So without further ado, let's get into the decode of the death of Kim Porter. The first thing that I want to point out is how Kim Porter died on November 15th, which leaves 46 days in the year. Notice Sean Love Combs and Sacrifice both equal 46 in the reduction cipher. If you leave out his middle name, Sean Combs and Kim Porter match in the reduction ciphers, both equaling 53. In the Gematria community, our attention is often drawn to that one day in the month when we witness the date numerology adding up to the numbers 64, 17, 44. This alignment coincides with the word kill in 3 out of the 4 base ciphers. The reason behind this focus is that on such days, we frequently observe reports of celebrities passing, and it turns out that Kim Porter's death occurred on the infamous kill date. As we know from the reports, Kim Porter died at the age of 47 years old, and many speculate on whether or not her death was actually a natural cause, as there are many reasons to believe she was potentially a human sacrifice. Note that both human sacrifice and her age of death when spelt out are a 2-for-2 match in the base ciphers. So we also know that Kim Porter died in Toluca Lake, Los Angeles, California. Note, Kim Porter equals 118, just like the place that she died, and the word death and homicide both equal 118 in the Latin cipher. Here you can observe the day she passed away, November 15th, which when written out as such equates to 137, the 33rd prime number. Take note of how this aligns with her first name Kim, her full name, and even her place of death. It's worth recalling that by applying the rules of numerology, 330 reduces to 33 when we drop the zero. Remember, Kim died at the age of 47 years old, and many people believe that she was actually murdered despite the reports from the coroners. Hell, even her ex-husband, I'll be sure, thinks so, as we touched on earlier. Once again, celebrity deaths are intertwined with numerical hints, and in Kim Porter's case, her body was pronounced dead at 11:40 a.m. It's intriguing to note that her place of death equates to 114, akin to Diddy's birthday on November 4th, written 11/4. As we're aware, Diddy is undeniably entrenched in Hollywood, and Toluca is a residence for many Hollywood stars. Notably, it also adds up to 114 in the reverse ordinal. Similar to the majority of stories covered on this channel, the goal is to highlight how the media skillfully aligns the right numbers to fit their narrative, even if it appears far from the truth. In this instance, mainstream media aims to convince us that Kim Porter died of natural causes, despite being a healthy 47-year-old. Interestingly, both natural causes and murdered equate to 88. It appears they are subtly double-coding the narratives to not only align with the story, but also provide a hint at what might have actually happened. Expanding on the point made earlier, a year later, the LA coroner officially declared Kim's cause of death as lobar pneumonia. It's noteworthy that, according to the media, both her cause of death and her place of death are a perfect match in the reduction cipher. Now, in the present day, Diddy has stepped down as the chairman of Revolt Media, the company he founded amidst a barrage of allegations. Many believe it's the rightful moment for Diddy the Demon to have his past catch up with him. From domestic abuse and manipulative business tactics to outright demonic activities that prompted even his former protege Mace to seek the Lord's help after witnessing what he did during their long collaboration.
Her attorneys were really brilliant. They didn't sue just Diddy. They sued his corporations.
They sure did.
And they sued his corporations and sued as her, in her capacity as an employee. When you do that, it triggers commercial liability insurance.
Yeah.
And it triggers another policy called directors and officers. Okay? And we know he's a director
Correct.
Of these companies as the CEO. So now you got two policies. What happens then is it takes away Puffy's ability to settle. It's not his choice no more.
So it's no longer personal accountability. It's yep. his organization.
It's his organization. And it's no different than like if you hit somebody with your car.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you have State Farm. Mm-hmm. State Farm gets to decide to settle, not you. You could say, I didn't run the stop sign. That's not true. They're lying. If mm-hmm. State Farm says, we don't care. We did our investigation. We're settling. That's it. That's what happened here. So because they added those claims, the corporate insurance carrier got to say, read over and say, oh, hell no, we giving her the money.
We're hearing you. Diddy's public reputation is done.
It's done. It's done. It's done. It's done. It's done. It's done. It's done.
So with all that said, I gotta ask, while we're witnessing a glimpse of Diddy's potential demise, is this just another ripple in the waters that will pass, or will Diddy finally sink under the weight of these claims directed towards him? I guess we'll just have to wait and see. So if you guys like this story and want to hear about another celebrity who many believe was poisoned, despite what the media said, be sure to check out my video on the Southern rap legend, Pimp C. Oh yeah, as we're approaching the holiday season, you might have been considering getting a gift for a friend, family member, or even yourself. And what would be a better gift than some digital protection and access to content all over the world with Surfshark's VPN? So head over to Surfshark.com to get 83% off plus 5 months free using code SCRIPT in all capitals at checkout. Kill two birds in one stone and stop these hackers from stealing your info and support your boy. It's greatly appreciated. But you guys know the drill, man. Make sure to leave your boy a comment down below. Tell me what you guys think. Don't forget to smash the hell out of that like button, share the video, and most importantly, subscribe, man. Remember, all of those things are free to do. It's been your boy Script, and I'm out of here. Peace. Peace.